Morning at today's daf in Bechoros is Yud Beis. We're on Yud Aleph. We're in the very bottom of Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph. We're finishing up the Perek of Petach Hamor. What happens when you have a donkey and the donkey gives birth to a firstborn male? So it has Kedusha, it has sanctity, and it has to be redeemed. Now when I say it has Kedusha, so as we've discussed now throughout this Perek, much like Kedusha Sadam. Kedusha Sadam, when a human has a firstborn, so it too has to be redeemed. Not to say that the person himself that's born is going to actually have it belongs to Hekdesh. I know the nusach of Pidyon Aben sounds a little bit like that, but from the Gemara it's very clear it's not true. When a human is born, firstborn, so it doesn't have kedusha. So the same thing is true with Petach Hamor, and yet it has to be redeemed. And so over the course of this parak, we've been discussing the various details regarding the mitzvah of Pidyon Petach Hamor, how to redeem the firstborn donkey. There is another option, of course, and that's Arifa. We discussed it just lightly over the course of this parak. But the general discussion over here is about the redemption. You redeem it with the sheep, as we've discussed now numerous times over the course of this parak. And in the event that you don't have a sheep, so you could be redeeming it v'shaviyav. You could redeem it with its value. So a topic that was discussed in some detail yesterday, that as long as it's a commodity that's the same value as a donkey, so that could also serve as redemption as well. There are a number of times in halacha where you're going to redeem it with a sheep. The sheep, of course, has to be given to the Kohen. That's part of the Matnas Kahuna. But there are going to be occasions where you're going to redeem it, but you're not going to give it over to the Kohen, but rather you redeem it with the sheep and you just keep it for yourself. Okay. Basic machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, which has been a big theme of this first parak of the Masechta, and that is the Petach Hamor, the firstborn donkey, prior to you redeeming it. So is it going to be Asr Bahana? So it's the Machlokus Tanai, Machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda says that it's Asr Bahana until you redeem it. And then after you redeem it, obviously, it's no longer Asr Bahana. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon says that prior to redeeming it, it's not Asr Bahana. It's Mammon Balim, it's your money, but it requires redemption. Okay? And again, when you work with that comparison of Petar Hamor to Petar Adam, so you kind of see that. Meaning that despite the fact that it needs redemption, but nevertheless, it itself is not Asr Bahana. A human being is not Asr Bahana prior to redemption. Okay, so it's a machlokas tanayim. The Mishnah, as we pointed out, the Stam Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yehuda, that a Petach Hamor prior to redemption is Asr Bahana. And the Gemara discussed that extensively. Well, that's been one of the biggest themes of this first parak, this machlokas in Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. There are going to be occasions where you're going to be redeeming it with a sheep, but you don't have to give the sheep over to the Kohen. What would be those occasions? So we saw that back in the Mishnah and Daf test. The Mishnah and test taught us that in the event of a suffix, let's say the animal gave birth to twins, and we don't know which came out first. In other words, and there was not twin boys, it was a boy and a girl, and we don't know which came out first. So there we have a suffix. So in a classic case of suffix, where it could be that we have a firstborn donkey, but because of the circumstances, we're simply not sure. So what you're going to do is you're going to be redeeming, but you're not going to be giving the sheep over to the Kohen. So what do? You are poda a se on the Petach Hamor. You keep it for yourself. Okay. And in that vein, so we're going to be now continuing right where we left off yesterday. We're going to go a little bit off course in the beginning of the daf today, finishing up yesterday's daf. The Gemara is going to take us on a little bit of a tangent, but thematically it fits in to this point right now, which is that sometimes there is a, let's say suffix, although you'll see in the case coming up, not necessarily even of a suffix, but because of halachic circumstances, what you're going to do is you're going to take off, let's say right now, Trumas and Maestros, but you don't give it over to the Kohen, you don't give it over to the Levi, based on a number of variables. So, let's pick it up right now, on the very bottom of Yad Alpha Med Aleph. Amar of Shimon Barnas and Amar Rabbi Chanina Lokech Tevalim. If you purchase Tevel, untithed produce, Mimu Rachim and Ovi Kochavim, and Miruch was done. So what is Miruch? Literally, it is the skimming of the top. It's the leveling of the top of the pile. Meaning, Miruch is one of the things that's Koveya. It establishes now that this produce is going to be Chayv and Trumas and Maestros. What is so special about Miruch, about leveling off the top? It's very simple. You now know exactly how much you have. Meaning, prior to that, you just simply had a pile of whatever it was, wheat, barley, whatever you were harvesting. You just simply have a pile of it. You don't really know how much it is. You know you have produce. But once you level off the top, so now you know with pretty good precision the quantity of how much you have. And now, after Miruch, there's going to be a chi of Trumas and Maestros. This produce, however, was purchased from a non-Jew. Now, non-Jew owning land in Eretz Yisrael, is that produce going to be subject to Trumas HaMaisos? You guessed correctly, it's a machlokas. Major debate throughout the Gemara is the Gemara in Gittin discusses this, debates this extensively. But we will see in just a moment which side of the machlokas we subscribe to. So if I have tevalim, I have tevel that I purchased from a non-Jew, memurachim. Now, it's not clear who did the miruach. That's an important point, which we're gonna discuss in just a moment. So me'asrin ve'in shalom. So what I do is I take off trumas ha'maisos, and they belong to you. In other words, you don't have to give the trumas ha'maisos over to a kohen and to a levi, respectively. Now, the obvious question, as we are in the very top of Yadalfa Mebeis, de'marchin oman. Well, who did the miruach? So ilem de'marchin ova kochavim de'gan chamerachman avalo de'gan ova kochavim. So are we suggesting now that the miruach was done by the non-Jew? So if we have the produce owned by, the land owned by a non-Jew, and the miruach owned by a non-Jew, so now we're in full exemption, right? There is absolutely no obligation to be mafish or masamaisros. So ela demarchinu Yisrael. So the Gemara says, okay, so it must be a question where the Jew did the miruach. Now the Jew did the miruach, so what are we talking about over here? I'm sorry. Ela demarchinu Yisrael. Now we, in our gears, we have the words meirishus of a kochavim, but probably better stated, as we see on the side of the Gemara, birishus of a kochavim. So, the Gemara sets it up where, what kind of situation is this? It's a structured sharecropping, where you had the Jew working on the land that belonged to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael, and so, what is the status of the produce? So, as we know with sharecropping, when you are the sharecropper, you don't own the land, but rather what you do is you're just simply splitting the profits of the produce, right? Whatever the arranged structure of the deal is. Could be a half, could be a third, could be a quarter, doesn't matter. Whatever the arrangement is, so you're going to be getting part of the produce. So, you as the sharecropper, so you worked the land, and you are getting some of the profit, and here, you are going to be mafrid shumas ha'maisos, obviously on your portion. Obviously, the non-Jew is not going to take off shumas ha'maisos on his portion. And now what do you do? So here's what we're learning together. We are now learning together that you don't have to give it to the Kohen, you don't have to give it to Levi, you can maintain it for yourself. And the Gemara is going to explain why should all this be so. So, So the Gemara over here explains everything. The Gemara says, number one, we're subscribing to the viewpoint that even though a non-Jew owns land in Eretz Yisrael, but that's not going to be mafkia, that's not going to be removing the basic requirement of Trumas HaMaisos. So, the land is still considered Eretz Yisrael with Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, and the produce on that land is going to be subject to Trumas HaMaisos. Now, to be clear, even though that's true, if the non-Jew was the full owner, and he was the one to do Miruach, so that would now create an exemption of the produce, and that produce would not require Trumas HaMaisos. However, because we have a Jew who was sharecropping, and now got a percentage of that produce, so on his produce that he did, Miruach, so now there's an obligation of Trumas HaMaisos.
There's a second Miruach that he did, right?
Huh?
The sharecropper does a second Miruach on his own portion.
Yeah, but not a second Miruach, meaning it's the first time the produce now has been harvested and measured. And Vehein Shalom. But you don't have to give it to a Kohen or a Levi. Now, why not? The Gemara explains this point as well. Because look, even though on one hand it is true that there is a chiv hafrasha, I have to separate. On the other hand, consider I'm going to give it to you. Now, if I wasn't sharecropping and the non-Jew not only owned the land but even worked the land as well, and he were to do miruach, so you know that you have no business going over to him and demanding trumas ha'maisos. And again, because he's a non-Jew who owns land, and even though it still has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, but if he were to have done Miruach, he would not have been obligated. So my koach, meaning the power invested in me, in being a sharecropper in this land, now is coming, it's sourced, it's based on the non-Jew, and because you couldn't have dealt with him and collected from him, so therefore I come with that same koach. And as a result of that, you're mafish shumas ha'maisos, but you don't have to give it to the Kohen and to the Levi. Now, as far as the Levi and Maaser Rishon, it's understandable. Meaning, we certainly understand how Motzi Mechaver Olav Araya, meaning he certainly can't take it from you because, again, of the argument of the Gemara. By the Truma, it's certainly going to be a little more challenging to understand that. Meaning, you don't want to give it to the Kohen, okay, but it's Truma, and you're not allowed to eat it. Meaning, a Zar, a non-Kohen eating Truma, obviously there's nothing to talk about. you can't eat it. So perhaps what the Gemara means at this point in time regarding the Truma is that it's yours in the sense that you could sell it. And you'll sell it to another Kohen, and you don't have to give it to the Kohen. That could be what the Gemara means in, regarding how you are allowed to retain the Truma for yourself. But of course, you cannot allow to eat it. Anyway, Tanan Hasam. The Gemara over here quotes a Mishnah from Demai. Hamafki peros of etzel akus of etzel amaretz. Let's say you have peros, you have produce, and you just ask your neighbor to wash it for you. Okay, simple case of pikadon. And your neighbor happens to be either a kusi or an amaretz. Kusi, questionable Jew. Amaretz, definite Jew, questionable in terms of what he knows. In either one of these events, bechaskan lamaiso l'shvius. So if you gave it to him and you tithed it, and then a week later you say, can I pick it up again? And he says, yes, thank you so much for washing it for me. Is there any concern whatsoever that the produce that I gave him, he may have swapped out for other produce? So there's no concern whatsoever. In other words, even though he either, his Judaism is questionable, that's a kusi, or his knowledge base is questionable, that's yam aretz, but if you give it to him to watch, in other words, he'll do what's right, and that is, he'll watch it, and he won't put his hands into it. Eitzel ove kochavim beperosav. I'm sorry. Eitzel ove kochavim kiperosav. However, if I give it to a non-Jew to watch, and now I come back and pick it up after he's watched it, now it's kiperosav. It's as if now this produce belongs to the non-Jew. Meaning a concern, and we'll see how strong a concern it is in just a moment, a concern that what he did is he swapped out while he was washing your fruit. So he figured, look, I'll take a little bit of his fruit. I'll replace it with other fruit. Not a big deal. Now, obviously, the mufkad, the person entrusted, the custodian, shouldn't be behaving in that behavior, but the non-Jew is not going to see as much of a problem with it, and therefore we have to be concerned. And therefore we're going to treat the produce like his. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Omer Demai. Now Rabbi Shimon says, well, we're not sure that he did it. Maybe he did it. Demai, Suffolk. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Lazar Lahafish Kulam Lo Pligi. So the Rabbi Lazar says like this. Look, if you deposited your produce by a non-Jew, and he's now serving simply as a custodian watching it, everyone is in agreement that when you take your fruit back, you have to take off Trumas and Maestros again. Ki Pligi, Litna L'Kohen. The only question is that after I was Mafrit Trumas and Maestros again, after having it taken back from the non-Jew, the non-Jewish custodian, do I then, in turn, everyone agrees we take off Trumas and Maestros? Do I then have to give it to the Kohen? Tanakam is Avra Vadech Alfinu by Misnina L'Kohen. As far as the Tanakam is concerned, of course. Meaning, we don't suspect the non-Jew took produce. We know he did. Meaning, that's just simply in their mindset, in their culture, this is totally acceptable behavior. And so therefore, we know he took our produce, replaced it with his own. And so therefore, this produce is not questionable as to whether it's chayv in trumas or maestros. It for sure is. And Rabbi Shimon Savar Demai. And Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that it is Demai, meaning we don't know for sure that he engaged in this behavior. We suspect he engaged in this behavior. And so therefore, when I'm being mafish shumas and maestros, I'm doing so out of suffolk. And again, so here we go again, where I take off shumas and maestros, but I don't have to give it to the Kohen Levi. I can retain it for myself. Now, yelser of dimit v'kam alash maestros amalei abayi time in the misaf galan, ich halfinu yilo halfinu. Now, the only issue over here is just a question of, did he definitely engage in this behavior, or maybe did he, or he may have? Now, you're telling me that if the non-Jew actually switched it, and we know he did, so then you have to be mafir shumas and maestros and give it to the Kohen. Now, the Gemara says, but what did we learn in the beginning of this entire sugya? We learned that when you're purchasing tevel from a non-Jew, mimurachin, and again, the way we set up the case, whereas a Jew who did the sharecropping on the land, so you take off Trumas and Maestros and they belong to you. Meaning, and over here, it for sure was owned by the non-Jew. The land was absolutely owned by the non-Jew. So I don't understand what just happened over here. The Mishnah in Demai is going against the halacha that we just learned. So Dilma, Kamet Truma Gedola, Kamet Truma Meiser. So the Gemara says, well, maybe there's a distinction between what kind of Truma we're talking about. Truma Gedola, that's the original Truma that you take off from the produce, 2% that goes over to the Kohen, as opposed to Trumas Meiser. Trumas Meiser, that's the Truma taken off of Meiser. The 10% that's given to the Levi, of that, 10% goes over, is given over to the Kohen, from the Levi to the Kohen. This is what's called Trumas Meiser. And maybe there's a distinction between the two. Misvara, as far as making an argument why there should be a difference between the two, there's no good argument why there should be a difference between the two. But the Gemara points out there is in fact a difference. And once he made that suggestion, Askaras and Milsa, so he says, oh my gosh, he reminded me. I totally forgot. That in the event that you purchase Tevel from a non-Jew, that it is in fact going to be exempted from Trumas Meiser, shenemar, ve'alavim to deber v'amar talahem, ki t'chume eis b'nei Yisrael. T'vam sh'ata lokech me b'nei Yisrael, ta mafrish mehen Trumas Meiser, v'nos na l'kohen, t'vam sh'ata lokech me n'ovi kochavim, I ata mafrish mehem Trumas Meiser, v'nos na l'kohen. Simply stated, it's a drasha. Meaning, you're right. Misvar, there's no difference, there's no reason why we would make a difference between Truma Gedola versus Trumas Meiser. And by Truma Gedola, if I purchase it from a non-Jew, I'm going to be chayev in Trumas Meiser. However, by Trumas Meiser, Gzeiros HaKasuv. The Torah just simply says that when it comes to Trumas Meiser, so there is no requirement when you're purchasing produce from a non-Jew, there is no requirement to give Trumas Meiser over to the Kohen. Good. And that's the difference between the two halachas. And so therefore, everything works out fine. Okay. And all that was just but a tangent, meaning obviously that has nothing to do with Petach Hamor. Why was that stuck into our Gemara? Because thematically it fit in, because there's another circumstance in halacha where I'm mafrish. Obviously, we're talking about being poder, but it's the same basic idea. I'm mafrish shumas amaisos, but under certain halachic considerations, I'm mafrish, but then I don't have to give it to the Kohen or to the Levi, I get to retain it for myself. Again, over here, it's not even so much based on the suffix, it's just based on the halachic consideration of the non-Jew owns the property and the question of various drushas. Okay, finishing up yesterday's daf, v'im meis and nen nimbo. Now, if it were to die, so you're allowed to get hana'a. Now, the Gemara says, d'mitecha. Now, exactly where did the Petach Hamor die? So, ilam d'meis be kohen v'nen nebo kohen pshita. Mamoni didehu. So the Gemara says, now, are we talking about where, not the firstborn donkey, but rather the sheep. If we're talking about where the sheep died after having been given to the Kohen, and the whole point of the Mishnah is, well, the Kohen is allowed to get benefit from the sheep. Gemara says, that's not a chiddush. Meaning, you separate a sheep, and bipoda a petach hamor with that sheep, and you give it to the Kohen. As we've discussed throughout this parak, that's mammon kohen. That's just simply a monetary asset of the kohen. This is matnas kohuna with no kedusha, and so therefore, of course, the kohen is allowed to get benefit from it. And that's not even a chiddush. Why would the Mishnah have to tell us that? Ella demis beibalim venena bo kohen. So we're talking about where the sheep was set aside for the firstborn donkey, but before given to the kohen. It died in the possession of the owner, in which the Kohen is allowed to get benefit from it. Hanami Pshita, the Gemara says, isn't that also obvious? The Gemara says, not necessarily. So the Gemara says, look, here's the Havamina. The sheep, prior to me giving it to the Kohen, so it's not his yet. Even though I did the pigeon, and now the, you know, let's call it the Kedusha, I know it's subject to a machlokas, as we discussed in the beginning, but the kedusha of the Petach Hamor is now going on the set, but I didn't give it over to the Kohen yet. So you could formulate an argument, and that is that it doesn't yet belong to the Kohen. So kamashlan demi idna da'afreshe b'rishusa de Kohen kai. So the Gemara says, no, but that's not so. Meaning the moment that you're mafresh the seh for the kedusha of the Petach Hamor onto the seh, that's it now, the seh now is mamon Kohen. It happens to be that you haven't given it to him yet, but that's simply a formality. In terms of ownership, it's mamon kohen, and so therefore, if the sheep were to die, even at this point in time, the kohen is allowed to get benefit from it. It's considered mamon kohen. Okay. Again, the sheep itself has no kedusha. It's just mamonus. It's mamon kohen. And what we're learning together, the chiddush of the Gemara is that even prior to you giving it to the kohen, it's still considered mamon kohen. And so therefore, when it dies, he can benefit from it. The hafrasha is the critical moment of when it becomes the property of the Kohen. That's the entire point of the Gemara. We're in the very top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and we start now with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that when the Torah says you have to redeem on a sheep, the basic point the Mishnah is going to make, it's got to be a sheep. Now, seh, by the way, can mean either a sheep or a goat. But it's got to be something in the family of seh. It cannot be any other animal. Now, mind you, let's be clear, as we learned in yesterday's daf. Now, you could redeem it on any commodity if it's dollar for dollar value. That part is true, but again, there are two ways in which you can redeem it. Bishav yav, using a commodity, or a sheep, and there on the sheep, it could be pennies on the dollar, it doesn't matter. Right? There is, again, we learned this also yesterday, and the day before, we learned this on Daf Yud. There are recommended amounts that it should be, but vis-a-vis Me'ikar Hadin, the sheep could be valued at any amount. Pennies on the dollar, and still the redemption would work. What about the balance? So the owner of the donkey gets to benefit from whatever balance there may be between the sheep and the donkey. But it's got to be a sheep. And that's the point of the Mishnah. Let's see the Mishnah inside. Ein podin, lo be'egav, lo b'chayav, lo b'shchutav, lo b'treifa. One is not allowed to redeem it, neither with a calf nor with a wild animal, not with a shechted sheep, meaning the sheep itself has to be alive, v'lo b'treifa, and the sheep cannot be a treifa as well. V'lo b'klaim, v'lo b'koy, and neither with klaim or koy. Now, klaim is a animal that was a crossbreed. Now, even if the crossbreed is, let's say, the mother's a goat and the father is a sheep, they're, quote-unquote, within the same family. Obviously, sheep and goat are not the same. But vis-a-vis the halacha of Petra Chamor, they both are good. But because the offspring is a crossbred animal, so you can't use that for pigeon and not for a koi. Now, what a koi is, so it's a suffix. But it's even a bigger suffix. I didn't mean that. Meaning, yes, it's a suffix, but in our context, a koi is even a further crossbreed, meaning it's a crossbreed between a chaya and a behema. So, and that's not going to, and you cannot use that for pigeon, peter, chamor. Interesting Rashi over here. Rashi says regarding a trefa, meaning most of the trefas we're not going to be able to see. They're internal. So how do I know this sheep is a trefa? So really interesting Rashi. Rashi writes over here, second line down, shenechtechu raglam and arkuva lamala. So Rashi gives an example, and the example that he gives is, you know, the back leg is cut off. And we learned this back in Chulin, in the third perek, that's one of the simani trefa where the back leg is cut off. So it's interesting, Rashi points to a trefa that is clearly evident. Now, well, how much can you make with this Rashi? Meaning, let's say it's a trefa that was undetectable until after you shechted it. Under those circumstances, would that also be disqualified? Would that also negate the redemption? It's a fair question. I'm not sure what the answer is, but certainly it's interesting that Rashi gives that particular example. Rebbe Elazar matibiklaim, now Rebbe Elazar allows for the redemption to be done with kalayim, meaning even though it's a crossbreed, but it's a subtle crossbreed where mother's a sheep and father's a goat, so under those circumstances, Rebbe Elazar would allow this crossbred sheep or crossbred goat to be used for your pigeon peter chamor. Mimneshi said, because really, truth of the matter, says Rebbe Elazar, it is a seh, meaning, okay, so seh, by the way, seh, there's no good English word for the word seh, meaning sheep is kevis, goat is az. Seh is the generic term, the more general term describing both of those animals. So, all right, I'd say flock, but that's also not good. In other words, we just simply don't have an English equivalent of the word seh. But Rebbe Elazar's point is that, look, I understand it's crossbred, but mother and father are in the seh family, so the offspring is also seh. V'osa b'koi, m'mishu u'safik. However, when it comes to the koi, so you can't do that because it's a suffix. Meaning, again, what's a koi? So that's a crossbred between chaya and behema. So now at this point in time, you both of the parents are not in the seh family. And so Rebbe Elazar says, I'm not going to go that far. You can't use that for pigeon petach hamor. Nasal koin ena koin rashai lekaimo ashi frish seh tachtav. Now, how about like this? I have a firstborn donkey. So I know now the procedure, right? We're at the end of the parak. I know what to do. I have to be mafrish a seh, and then give the seh to the kohen. How about this? You know what? I don't want the headache. I'll just give the firstborn donkey over to a kohen. Now, the Mishnah is telling us, don't do that. That's exactly the point of the Mishnah. Ein hakohen rishay lekaimo, asher yafrish seh tachtav. So even though you gave the firstborn to the firstborn donkey to the Kohen, so the Mishnah says you really shouldn't do that unless you see him being mafresh shesev right in front of you. Otherwise, don't do it. Meaning, don't just simply hand the headache over. Headache, by the way, yeah, it's nice how I'm calling a mitzvah a headache. But you don't want to do it. So, but you can't just simply pass it on to the Kohen and say, hey, you do it. The Mishnah says you shouldn't do that. Why not? So we're going to see together in the Gemara, quite frankly, because we don't fully trust the Kohanim. And we'll explain why. Meaning, why that's not a nice way to speak about the Kohanim, that we don't trust them. But in this particular circumstance, the Gemara is going to explain why we don't trust them. Okay. We'll come back to that at the end of the sugya. In the meantime, however, let's start the Gemara. Masnisa Mani Ben Bagbag Hi. Our Mishnah is authored by Ben Bagbag, right? We're probably more familiar with him from the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Detanya Ben Bagbag Omer, Namar Kanch Sev, Namar Lahalan Sev, Malahalan Prat L'chol Hashem Asalalu, Afkan Prat L'chol Hashem Asalalu. Okay. And so why is it that with Pidgin Petach Hamor, it has to be something within the Sev family? So because we're learning out a Gzeri Shava. It says Sev regarding Pidgin Petach Hamor, it says Sev regarding Karban Pesach, and we know that when it comes to Karban Pesach, only two types of animals are eligible for Karban Pesach. Either a sheep or a goat. Same thing is true regarding Pidgin Petach Hamor. Either a sheep or a goat, no other animal. So the Gemara says, really? So it's connected to Karban Pesach. So we should take all the restrictions by Karban Pesach and we should apply to our Pidgin Petach Hamor. So you're telling me now that it has to be like a Karban Pesach. So it should be like a Karban Pesach, not only in terms of type, but also regarding all the rules of a Karban Pesach. When you're in the market shopping for your Karban Pesach, what does the goat and sheep have to be? Right? Most people don't know this because it's been only 2 millennia since we've been last shopping for a Karban Pesach. But the animal has to be within its first year of life. It has to be male. It has to, of course, be tamim. It has to be non-blemished because it's going to be a karban. So you're telling me now that that's all true regarding Pidgin Petach Hamor? Now, we already know that that's not true. The previous Mishnah, Daf Tes, taught us that the sheep could be blemished, physically blemished. I understand we just learned together it can't be a trefa. But obviously there's a world of difference between being a bamum and being a trefa. A bamum just simply means a physical blemish, an external physical blemish, which would have disqualified it for a karban. That's fine. But what it can't be is it can't be a trefa, as we just learned. But if you're telling me that all this is based on a connection, a hekesh between, or a gzeir shava between Karban Pesach and Pidgin Petach Hamor, they both have the word seh, so then it should follow all the regulations and all the restrictions of a Karban Pesach. So the Gemara says, no, tam lamar tifteh tifteh. So the Gemara says, no, because the Torah repeatedly says regarding Pidgin Petach Hamor, tifteh, multiple times, which means you redeem it, and that's an expansion of the fact that the Torah repeats it. It's a ribui. So riba, e tifteh tifteh riba filo kol haninami. So the Gemara says, riba, really? So once we have an expansion, so we should allow other animals as well. So Imkain says semaya hanile. So the Gemara says, no, but we also have a gzera shava. And so basically we are doing the classic balancing act between, on one hand, we are connecting the se of Pidgin Petach Hamor to that of Karban Pesach. On the other hand, we have a ribui. So therefore we are balancing between the gzera shava and the ribui. And how does the balance work? It's very simple. Meaning vis-a-vis the gzera shava, that limits us to the type of animal to use. So just like by Karban Pesach, it's seh or it's seh, which means either a keves or aze, so too by Pidgin Petach Hamor, it has to be of that type. After that, that's where it stops. Why? Because I have the expansion, tifteh tifteh, which tells me that it could be within the sheep, within the seh, I should say better, so it could be blemished, it could be older than a year. In other words, in that regard, it does not have to follow the Karban Pesach. E bailahu. The Gemara now is going to be asking numerous questions. So the first one, a lot of fun. So let's say you have a ben pakua. And as we turn back to the fourth parak of Chulin, such a fun topic over there in that parak, where you shechted the mother, there was a fetus inside. So in the fetus case, was at full term. So is that fetus now considered shechted? And this was a machlok between Rav Meir and the Chacham, and back in the fourth parak of Chulin. Rav Meir is of the opinion that the fetus still requires its own shechita. It is considered an independent entity. Even though it was in the mother, during the mother's shechita, nevertheless, it's still considered an independent entity. It requires its own shechita. Masha'enkein, according to the Chacham, which obviously is a halachically accepted opinion, the fetus inside is considered shechted. Or the other way to say it is, is that it's just simply an appendage to its mother, and therefore it doesn't require shkita. That's the chakir we talked about back in the fourth parak. However you want to say it, according to the chachamim, it's a shechted animal. And so that means to say then that you're allowed to eat it. Yes, we learned that once it's if you let it live and it starts walking, midrabbanan, it requires shechita. But this is our ben pekua. I have a ben pekua sheep. Can I use it for pigeon petur chamor? So Ali b'dramer lo tibay lach dekevin damer amer ben pekua tan shechita se ma'al yahu. So according to Rameir, it's not even a question. Of course you could use it. Because Rameir says that our ben pekua is not considered an appendage of the mother. It's an independent entity. It requires its own shechita. Otherwise stated, it's a sheep. It's a regular sheep. So for sure, for Rameir, we know the answer. The question is starting for the Chachamim. Because the Amish shechita zima matarasa. So we know that according to the Chachamim, it is a shechted animal. Even though it isn't shechted, but halachically shechted. So kibisba b'dekula dame. So on one hand, basically, even though it's alive and well and walking around, it's basically walking meat, right? We had that same formulation back in Chulin according to the Chachamim. Kibisba b'dekula, it's like meat in the basket. Odilma came to hashtamia rahid va'azil se karinan bay. On the other hand, I know halachically shechted, but look at it right now. It's jumping around. It's doing a great job. It's running around. And so maybe in this regard, we can, for pigeon petur chamor, it qualifies as a living sheep in which we could do pigeon petur chamor. And the Gemara brings down a machlokas amaraim on this very issue. Now, amle Rav Ashi l'marzucha, my daitach, the ofta mi pesach. So the Gemara says, now, let's see if we can give some sort of svara to this very interesting machlokas. Within the sheet of the chachamim, can I use my ben pekua for pigeon petur chamor? So, remember now that what we've learned together is the requirement of sheep is based on its connection to Karban Pesach. So, imalan zachar tamim ben shana, afkan zachar tamim ben shana. So, tifta tifta riba. So, e tifta riba, afilo ben pekua nami. So, on one hand, we had the gzereshava. On the other hand, we also had the double mention of tifta, which is a ribui. So once we're in the world of Ribui, we're on that side of the balance of expansion, so why don't we expand also our Ben Pekua as well? Imkain says, Maya Hanile. But the response is, yeah, but I'm on the other side of that equation, meaning I'm still on the Gzereshava side, meaning a Ben Pekua can't be used for Karban Pesach. Halachically, it's already shechted. So I'm more on the Karban Pesach side of that balance, where just like by Karban Pesach, obviously a Ben Pekua will not work for your Karban Pesach. It's already considered a shechted animal. So in that regard, I cannot use a Ben Pekua for your pigeon petur chamor. So the Gemara asks the question, the Gemara brings down a machlokas, and the Gemara leaves it at that. Ibailu maliftos bin nidmeh. So the Gemara says, okay, now what about nidmeh? Now nidmeh is as follows, as we've discussed already this point numerous times. Mutated animal. Mother and father are both sheep. Mother and father are both goat. And what came out is a mutation. And it's something that does not look like its mother. But let's make the question exciting. Meaning, let's say the mother and father are both sheep, and what came out looks like a goat. So over here, even though it's a mutation, and even though, as we all know, you can't use it as a carbon, but why not use it for pigeon petur chamor? So Ali b'de Rabbi Lazar lo tibay lach hashta b'klein parkinan b'nidmeh mi baye. So the Gemara says, now, according to Rabbi Elazar, we know the answer. The Rabbi Elazar of our Mishnah, he said that you could use kalayim, meaning if the mother's a goat and the father's a sheep, so the crossbred offspring can be used for pigeon petur chamor. That's a bigger chiddush. This is much more obvious, meaning here, both parents are the same animal. Just happens to be the offspring came out mutated. So for Rabbi Eliezer, it's obvious that it would be fine. So kiti bayilach aliba derabanan beklaimu delo parkinan benidbe parkinan demoloshna. Now for the chachamim, so you can't use a crossbred animal, meaning if mother's a sheep and father's a goat, or vice versa, so the offspring is a crossbred animal. According to the chachamim, it can't be used for pigeon petur chamor. But over here, it's not a crossbred animal; it just came out mutated. So maybe this would be different, or maybe it's not different. So Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, well, let's consider. Parshi Aldam in A's, Ein Podin. Now, if the cow gives birth to a goat, so you can't redeem it. So the Gemara says, "Harachos she'aldam in eis podin." Now the diuk seems to be pretty straightforward. If it were a sheep giving birth to a goat, so you would be allowed to redeem it. Okay, so money. Elema Rabbi Elazar habeklaim nami parkina. Now this anonymous brisa, it's not Rabbi Eliezer, because according to Rabbi Eliezer, like again, the point is obvious. If the offspring of a crossbreed can be used for pigeon, so certainly a mutation can be used as well. So it must be that the author of the brisa is going like the chachamim, and the author of the brisa again, the brisa itself doesn't speak about mutation for the mother and father are goat, or the mother and father are sheep. The author of the brisa was talking about where the cow gave birth to a what looks like a sheep or what looks like a goat. So Ella lav rabbanahi. So it must be that the author of the brisa is a chachamim, and if that's true, so then we have our answer. Meaning the only reason why the brisa says it's no good is because the mother's a cow, and what came out looked like a goat. But if the mother's a sheep and what came out looking like a goat, that would be fine. The Gemara says no. Lo 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 Rabbi Eliezer he and agufa kamashmalan de parshi aldam in eiz ein podin. So the Gemara says no. Your assumption was incorrect. The author of the brisa is Rabbi Eliezer, and the point of the brisa is not the diuk in the brisa, but it's actually what the brisa is saying. Because here's what I could have argued. Lo tamezil abasrei diday v'hai eiz ma'al yahu. Look. I know its parents are cows. Cows are obviously not to be used for pigeon petra chamor. That's our Mishnah. But if what comes out looks like a goat, I know it's a mutation, but it looks like a goat, so can't we use it for pigeon petra chamor? Or it looks like a sheep, so can't we use it for pigeon petra chamor? That's exactly the point of the brisa. The brisa says no. Ela zil baser ime, v'hai egelhu. So regardless of what the offspring looks like, we know it's genetics, we know it's a product of a cow, and therefore, halachically, it's a cow. It looks like a goat, okay, but halachically, it's a cow. That's exactly the point of the brisa. The brisa is Rabbi Eliezer. Tashma. Didni Rabba bar Shmuel Ezu klaim rachel she'aldam in eiz ve'aviv seh. So let's say, what is kalayim? The sheep gives birth, or right, the ewe. Right, if I could speak a little more refined. The ewe gave birth to something that looks like a goat, and meanwhile, its father is a sheep. So a ewe is a female sheep. E-W-E. Okay, it's fine. But basically, this brisa is so confusing, meaning, aside from the fact that we got to keep track of what's what, but the brisa now is describing what? A crossbreed? Brisa is not describing a crossbreed. Meaning both mother and father in the sheep family. And what comes out is something that looks like a goat. So, kalayim hu, nidmehu. So the Gemara right away jumps on this brisa. Why are we calling it a crossbreed? It's not a crossbreed. It's a nidme, it's a mutation. So the Gemara says, ela ezu dami leklayim, deshavir rabbanan ki kalayim. So the Gemara says, you're right. Of course you're right. What the brisa meant was, is that halachically we're going to treat it like kalayim. Even though it's not. And that is, rachos she'aldam in eiz v'aviv seh. Oh, okay, fine. So we just cleaned up the language of the brisa. It's not a crossbred offspring. It's rather a mutation. So the Gemara says, now we're saying that even though it's a mutation, the brisa just taught us kalayim hu. It falls under the halachic category of kalayim. Now, vis-a-vis what? Now, lamai ilakachim, mehech demai kalayim mehasam, imamai nidma. Now, if we're talking about just the standards of a karban, we all know, for the standards of a karban, it's going to be following the same rules. Wherever we learned out that kalayim is no good, that's the same place where we're learning nidme is no good as well. D'tanya shor kesef prad l'kalayim o'ez prad l'nidme. So, we have a drasha that tells us, and it's from the same psukim in Parshas Emor, that just like kalayim is no good for a karban, neither is a mutated animal good for a karban as well. So, good. So the Gemara says, so that can't be what we're describing over here. And Ela Bechor, and if we're talking about the halacha Bechor, Ach Bechor Shor Merchmana, Ashe Hu Shor, U Bechor Shor. Now, for vis-a-vis the halachas of the firstborn of a kosher animal, right, Bechor Behema Torah, we have another drasha for that, where mutations are not going to have Kedushas Bechor. So Ela Lamaiser, so it must be for the halachas of Maiser Behema. Gemara says, we know that as well, Tachas Tachas, Mikachim Gamar. We already have a Gzera Sheva that tells us that whatever the requirements are regarding a regular carbon, same thing is true regarding Maaser Behema. Ela lepetu chamor. So being that we have no other halachas to apply to, not to karbanos, not to bechor, not to Maaser Behema, so it must be now that the point of this brisa is that it's addressing pidyon petor chamor, the sheep. And that what the brisa is teaching us is that a mutated sheep is going to be ineligible for pidyon petor chamor. To which the Gemara says, lo, la'olam la'maiser. No, we're talking about Maaser Behema. Ukugon sheyesh bo mixas amanim. And even though it's a mutation, it's not a full mutation. Now, we discussed this in the beginning of the perek. Meaning, in the world of mutation, there is a full mutation, and there's what's called mixa simanim, partial mutation. In some ways, it looks like its parents, and in other ways, it does not. So, ma'u detem avar avar min b'chor gamar. So, I might have thought that the gzeres shava should take us into the direction of b'chor. Kamash malan tachas, tachas mikachim gamar. So, there are different criteria when it's mixa simanim of that of a b'chor versus that of a regular carbon. For a b'chor, it has kedushas b'chor. Now, as we learned in the beginning of this perek, when it has mixa simanim, when it partially resembles its parents, so it's going to have kedushas b'chor. And as we explained in the beginning of the perek, you still can't bring it as a karban. Why? Because it's a shinui. Meaning the fact that it's partially mutated is a shinui, and therefore it can't be brought as a karban. But it has kedushas b'chor. So, our question of Maaser Behema, when by mixa simanim, so partial mutation, are we connecting it to Bechor? That's exactly the point of the Braisa. No, we're not. We're connecting it to Kachim, and just by standard carbon, partial mutation is unacceptable for a carbon. So too, partial mutation is unacceptable for Maaser Behema. Okay. And one more question to be discussing, Ibailahu.
If there are two sheep giving birth to a goat, why the discussion of Marat Ayin is not brought up? Because people would see a goat is being used for...
Goat's acceptable. Goat's part of the Seh... Yeah. It's part of the Seh family. Again, Seh, no good English word for Seh. Seh is a term that describes either sheep or goat. Okay. Ibailu malav liftos bipsulim ugdashim. Our last question. So far this morning, on our daf, we asked the question of using our ben pekua as the sheep for redemption... Unresolved, machlokas amaraim. We talked about using a mutated animal where both parents are a sheep or both parents are a goat. And what comes out is something that looks like not its parents, but still in the Seth family. Can that be used for petach hamor? So that also was an open-ended question. And our last question is psul amukdashim. What is psul amukdashim? You had a sheep that was going to be used as a carbon. We were makdish it. It was ready to be used as a carbon, and it got a physical blemish. What do you do now with that sheep? Now you can redeem it. But even after you redeemed it, it has residual kedusha. And with that residual kedusha, even though it doesn't have to be brought as a carbon and it can be eaten anywhere, however, it can only be eaten. You're not allowed to work that animal. You're not allowed to shear that animal. You're not allowed to milk that animal. You can't use that animal for its offspring. The only thing that we could do is we can eat the animal. This is psulei hamukdashim. Can I use my sheep, which was once upon a time was a carbon, then got a physical blemish, then was redeemed? Can I use this now for pidyon petor chamor? What is the consideration? Ibailu malav dos b'psula mekdashim alida Rabbi Shimon loti b'ailach kevin da'amra motar b'ana chulan hu. So the Gemara says like this. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's a no-brainer. Why? Because Rabbi Shimon has taught us that the donkey to begin with has no kedusha whatsoever. It is totally motar b'ana. So even though we're exchanging the sheep for the donkey, but it's just that. It's just an exchange. And we're not transferring kedusha. And so even though I'm using a sheep that has residual kedusha, so what? I'm not trying to introduce new kedusha into the sheep. So the question is for Rabbi Huda, who says that it is asar bahana. Now, for Rabbi Huda, where the donkey's asar b'ana, so you're transferring kedusha. Now, again, by the way, and this goes back to one of our basic themes of the perek. According to Rabbi Huda, the whole transfer is a real mind bender, because what happens in the transfer? What happens is that the donkey has status; it's asar b'ana. I transfer it to the sheep. The sheep does not obtain that kedusha. Now that's mind-bending. In other words, that the Gemara already made this point earlier in this parak. But according to Rav Yehuda, that's exactly what happens. But at least the sheep can absorb the Kedusha if the sheep has no Kedusha in it already. But if the sheep were Psulei Mukdashim, the sheep already has a certain amount of Kedusha. Admittedly, it's residual Kedusha, but it has a certain amount of Kedusha. And now for it to be able to absorb the Kedusha of the donkey, maybe it can't do that. That's exactly the Gemara's question. My. Kevin Dasar Ba'anai, in Isser Chalal Isser. Great formulation of the Gemara. We can't have one Isser going on top of another Isser, meaning if the sheep is Psulei Mukdashim, it already has a certain amount of Isser in it, and for it to be able to absorb the Isser of the Petra Chamor, there's just simply no room for it. Odim, Kevin Delotafis Pijano, if Kui Isser Ba'amahu. Or maybe no. Maybe the correct way to look at this redemption is not that the sheep is not absorbing anything, but rather it's just there to release the Kedusha of the firstborn donkey. And so if that is the mechanics of redemption, so then even though my sheep is Psula Magdashim, that'd be fine. So Amar of Mari Berei de Rav Kahana, Mizuta my dechsibahu kitzvi vechayal, matzvi valya impodin apsula magdashim impodin. So the Gemara says, okay, now I'm going to remind you that when it comes to the Psula Magdashim, the Torah in Parshas Re'eh equates it to both Tzvi V'ayal, meaning the Torah says that you're allowed to eat it just like you're allowed to eat both the deer and the hart, H-A-R-T, another type of deer. So, Hashta De'asasach and the Gemara says, oh, I'm sorry, and just like I can't use a deer and a hart for Pidgin Petra Chamor, so I can't use Psula Magdashim as well. So the Gemara says, Hashta De'asasach, now, the Gemara says, now that you made that point, as we are on the top of the next Amud, so even according to Rabbi Shimon, who moments earlier we said, oh, the question is obvious, and the Gemara says, now, maybe not. Maybe it's not so obvious. Once we know that Psulei Mukdashim has the same halachic status, it's categorically, like Tzvi V'ayal, so just like I can't use Tzvi V'ayal for Pidgin, Petra Chamor, so even according to Rabbi Shimon, the Psulei Mukdashim would also be ineligible as well. Ibayilahu. Maluftos bebehema shivias. Okay, you know what? We'll stop here. Right, the last question is going to be an animal that was exchanged for a pair of shivias. Okay, it will take me a while to explain it. So we'll start tomorrow morning. Okay, quickly, a quick recap. All right, we went off on a tangent finishing up yesterday's daf regarding sometimes there being mafish shumas and maisis, but you don't have to give it to the kohen. Right, and circumstantially that would be in a case where the land is owned by a non-Jew, and you're sharecropping, and the produce that you take home as profit, so you mafish shumas and maisis, but you don't have to give it to the kohen. And go back to the beginning of the of shir today, and in terms of why that would exactly be the case. But that's just another example of where you're mafish, but you don't have to give it to the kohen. And then we started our mishnah today. Our mishnah told us that for pidgin petra chamor, it has to be of the sef family. Either a sheep or a goat, you cannot use any other animal. And even within the sheep family, it can't be a trefa. And the Mishnah debated whether it could be kalayim, meaning mother's a sheep, father's a goat. The crossbred offspring, could that be used for your pidgin petra chamor? Machlokes between the chachamim of our Mishnah and Rabbi Eliezer. And then the end of the mission, which we'll go over tomorrow, is how about just giving the donkey to the kohen? Our discussions in the Gemara today, so regarding sheep for our pidgin petra chamor, can it be ben pakua? Debate in the Gemara. Can it be? Can we use a nidme? Mother and father are both sheep, but what comes out is a mutated animal. Could that be used? Open-ended question of the Gemara. And finally, Psula Hamukdashim. Also, the Gemara leaves off as a... Well, actually, no. Here, the Gemara did not leave off open-ended. The Gemara says you can't. Why? Because since the Torah in Parshas Re'eh categorically puts it under category Tzvi V'ayal, so too, over here, just like Tzvi V'ayal cannot be used for a pidgin petra chamor, neither could Psula Hamukdashim.